Okay, good morning, everybody. Welcome back to our Shamir Saloshin class learning. Actually, one second. I forgot to make sure everyone here is muted. Sorry. Okay, sorry. Good morning. Welcome back to our Shamir Saloshin class learning. We are learning the Ilui Nishmaso and the Zeicher Nishmaso, Tzvi Gershon Ben Yoel V'Chana Lav Hashem. May his neshama have a continuous aliyah in the merit of the Torah that we will share this morning. We thank Alyssa Axrod and her family very much for their generous sponsorship of this shiur and their commitment to perpetuating the legacy of the Chofetz Chaim and helping us all improve our Shmiras HaLashon. We thank you very much. It should bring schosim to your family, Aliyah Neshama, to your father's Neshama. With Alyssa's permission, it's also a schos for continued refu and besoros tovos for bracha v'gayel, basrachal geta. She should have refu shem besoch she'achal Yisrael. So we'll begin with the tefillah al hadibur, please. Ribono she'olam, yi ratzon fenecha, rachum v'chanan, shetezekeini ha'im v'chol yom, lishmar piu, lishanim milashan har rechilis, v'ezarim l'dabar, afila al ish yachid, v'kol she'kein akla Yisrael, O achelik behem, v'kol she'kein l'Yisrael amidosef she'al klesh baruchu, v'ezarim l'dabar, divar sheker chanufa Machokas kas gaiva onas tvarem habanas panim leitzanus, vachal dibur asur, vizakini shalo dabra kim davar hatzarich linani gufi vinafshi, viukoma asai vidiburai, the shame shamayim, amen vamein halavai. So we are still in the Gemara Masachas Archin, and we are in depth having a shiurim on understanding different parameters and applications of Hilchos Shmiras HaLashon and Hilchos Lashon Hara based on the Gemara Maseches Erechin Tesvav through Teszayin. So last time we began our conversation, I'm going to quote the teaching of the Gemara again. We will be continuing with Rabbi Feldman's teachings. I want to quote something from the Chafetz Chaim as well. So we are up to the teaching of the Gemara. Amar, the Gemara says, Rabba bar Rav Huna, Rabba bar Rav Huna, Amar says, Kol milsa demis amra ba'ape tolasa, anything said in the presence of three, which is considered public, leis ba mishum lishna bisha. There is no prohibition of lashon hara involved in repeating it further. So yes, we spoke about this last time in depth based on some teachings from Rabbi Feldman. We will continue our interpretation of this teaching today. So what the Gemara has just told us is that anything said in the presence of three people, because three people is considered public, there is no prohibition of lashon hara repeating that further. Ma'itama, what is the reason for this? Chavarch, chavara, isa, your friend has a friend who he will tell. V'chavara de chavarach, chavara isa. And your friend's friend has a friend who he will tell. So if you said in the presence of three, this one has a friend and that one has a friend's friends and the friend has a friend. And before you know it, it's public knowledge if you said in the presence of three. So this cryptic line in the Gemara lends itself to much interpretation and it is not as simple as it seemed as we began exploring last time. So first I'm going to quote a teaching from the Chofetz Chaim. I'm quoting from the biography, the Chofetz Chaim by Rabbi M.M. Yasher. It's a very comprehensive art school biography on the life and teachings. It says on the front, the life and works of Rabbi Yisrael Meir Kagan of Radin, Rabbi M.M. Yashar. It is today's biographies, which I love. I read them, but there's much fewer words per page and bigger font. This is small font, a lot of words per page. And it took me months to read, because I read while I do a lot of other things also. It's almost 600 pages long, 590 pages long. Let me just tell you what year this was. I don't know, I don't find it. I don't want to take the time. Okay, so here we go. Okay. The Chofetz Chaim would explain the following parable to teach us the importance of Shmiras HaLashon. It is the practice of every householder in a small town to make himself a small vegetable garden next to his house. It also gives you a window back into the world. In Europe, when every householder in every small town had a small vegetable garden next to his house, enclosing it with a rudimentary fence, so some kind of basic fence. Sometimes the fence is too low to prevent the goats from jumping over it into the garden, whereupon they make an end of the seedlings and the row of plants. When the householder realizes that the goats are jumping in and taking the seedlings of the rows of plants, he makes the fence higher. Should it once happen that someone forgets to lock the garden door, the goats get in, they cause a lot of damage, the householder would angrily rebuke the members of his household over their carelessness. The goats got in, should the matter happen time and again, until the animals take up permanent residence in the garden, especially if pigs manage to get in. Parentheses, pigs cause the worst damage to a garden and seedlings. They burrow into the soil and they tear up the plants from the roots. Then the owner has no other choice but to fence the door over completely. And it compels him and the other people in his house to climb over the fence. Every time they want to get into their own garden, they have to be matriach themselves and climb over the fence. Although it takes great effort to climb over the fence every time they want to go into the garden, he is not dismayed because he has saved his vegetables from being destroyed by the animals. So he puts in successively higher, increasingly higher safeguards against the animals getting in, because he realized that the small fence wasn't enough, and even the little bit of a higher fence wasn't enough. And then the family keeps leaving the fence open and unhinged, till finally he puts up barricades. And even though he has to climb over and he's matriach himself every time he wants to pick the vegetables, it's the only way to save the garden. The Chofetz Chaim explained this as follows. It's the same with the needs of the human spirit, one of whose most important needs is the guarding of the tongue. In general, a person can expect many stumbling blocks and many ways of coming to grief through the tongue, evil gossip, slander, scornful mockery, etc. A person who is concerned about his spirit and cares for his spirit encircles himself with fences and barriers, and he sets himself a time to speak and a time to be silent. Kohelas, Paragimel. Eis lachashos ve'eis ledab. There's a time for silence and there's a time for speech. Should he realize, however, that his method is not completely effective, he has no other choice but to muzzle his mouth completely. A method that may be taken on alternative days or on alternative hours, this method will entail numerous hardships and certainly discomfort. The person might have to make use of language, hints, signals. He will have often occasion to become an object of derision to those who see him. So somebody takes upon himself Shmiras HaLashon, others often mock him. I can't forget this. So when at your table, Jane D. Hammer said that sometimes people want to, you know, you interject in conversation. So maybe this is Lashon Hara, and people say, oh, you think you're so religious? You never spoke Lashon Hara. So the Chafetz Chaim says that you will make yourself the object of derision to those who see him. Nevertheless, what won't a man do if he truly fears sin? To protect himself from coming to grief through such severe violations of Torah, it is better to suffer shame in this world rather than mortification in the world to come. One more paragraph. There's a basic principle in medicine. A discolored, unclean tongue is a symptom of some abnormal, disturbed condition of the body, the physical state. This is also true in the spiritual dimension. A tongue that is morally discolored, it's in quotes, and unclean is an indication that the internal system of the person's spirit is not functioning properly. For this reason, the Chofetz Chaim dedicated his energy and strength to healing his people from the worst spiritual epidemic of all. Literally says that in here, worst spiritual epidemic of all, evil gossip and slander in everyday speech. So by the way, I just saw the Shady Hammer is here. I don't know where she is now, but I didn't even realize when I quoted what you said, there you are. And I still remember what you said. And I don't know, it must have been a year or two ago. And you said, you know, you might say we're in situations where we suggest to somebody, you know, this, maybe we shouldn't be talking about this, maybe it's Lashon Hara. And all of a sudden people come around and they mock and they scoff and they say, you think you're so religious, you never spoke Lashon Hara. Chofetz Chaim says it's better to suffer shame in this world and put up as many safeguards around your vegetable garden as needed, the Nimshal, of course, being for our neshama and safeguarding our tongue, than to suffer mortification in the next world. So with that is our introduction to today's class. Let us go back to understanding this Gemara. What does it mean? And we began last time that if I say something in the presence of three people, there's no prohibition of spreading it further in terms of Lashon Hara. So we are going back to Rabbi Feldman. I marked for myself inside the Sefer where we left off last time. Keep in mind, if you miss any of the previous Shi'urim, they are available on YU Torah for all to review. Okay, so Rabbi Feldman introduces, and I reviewed what we learned last time. It's called Api Talasa, in the presence of three, and we're trying to understand how is it that just because something is said in the presence of three does not give me a license to go spread Lashon Hara? Isn't it still Lashon Hara? Like Rabbi Feldman said, if you remember last time, you would think it's worse. If something is said publicly and I tell it to more people, isn't that a greater prohibition? Because now I've transgressed not saying in front of one person, but it's saying in front of a group. So maybe it's a sin for every word I say multiplied by how many people I say it in front of. So how do we understand this teaching of the Gemara? These pashiurim on these in-depth shiurim on Maseches Arachin really remind us that just like you can't learn Torah Shebichtav without Torah Shebaal Peh, you cannot learn Torah Shebaal Peh without the explanation of the commentaries. You can't just open up the Gemara and say this is what the Gemara says and take it at face value. We need to know the different opinions and how we interpret what we are learning, because as we already began to explore last time, it's not so simple. It's not so pashut that just because something is said in the presence of three means you can spread the slander further. Not at all. So Rabbi Feldman told us that there were different opinions as to how we interpret and understand this piece of Gemara. We began last time exploring it. We are up to the Rambam. So I'm going to go back one paragraph from what we did last time, just to recap a little bit. This is deliberate, okay? I made a note where we're up to, and then in re-preparing for sure, I decided to go back one paragraph, so we are all on the same page, no pun intended. Or maybe the pun is intended. To some extent, okay, the Rambam's formulation of Ba'ape Talasa needs clarification, and we understand this as follows. When he codifies this principle, when the Rambam codifies the principle of in the presence of three, he adds a clause not found in the Gemara. He concludes by saying, as long as he does not intend to spread the matter further. Right? So Ba'api Talasa applies, says the Rambam, as long as there is an added prohibition by the Rambam, you do not intend to spread the matter further. The Rambam apparently assumes that this permission, Ba'api Talasa, in the presence of three, is only for an incidental reference in the context of a general discussion, not specifically geared towards the item of Lashon Hara. So there's a general discussion and the topic comes up. You're not specifically gearing the discussion to the topic of the Lashon Hara. With this brief addition, the Rambam teaches us several points. One, the Rambam does not allow committing an offense that has not already taken place. So if you know the material has not been spread, you cannot commit the offense and spread it further. Two, he only allows discussing the matter when it comes up. So you can't bring it up. Someone else brought it up and it was said in the presence of three and the matter is known. But if the matter is not known, you can't spread it further. Furthermore, you can only discuss the matter when it comes up without intentional dissemination. So just because you know something and just because it was said in the presence of three does not actually give you permission to go and spread it. Presumably, you cannot add at all to the degree to which it is spread. This might also lead to the conclusion that if public discussion of the matter has subsided, so you know, that's yesterday's news. People aren't interested anymore. They're not talking about it. Any permission to revive the topic must also cease. So it's not so clear that something said in the presence of three, all of a sudden you have, you know, this blanket heter to go around and spreading it. The Rambam is teaching us, you cannot commit an offense that has not yet taken place. So if somehow the word didn't get out, you cannot be the one. Just because you were sitting at the wedding and there were eight people at the table and the ninth woman spread some piece of Lashon Hara, if somehow those other eight didn't say anything, you can't be the one to spread the point. The Rambam only allows discussing the matter if it comes up anyways. So again, you didn't bring it up. It came up without intentional dissemination. You do not intend to disseminate the information further. You cannot add to the degree to which it was spread. And if public discussion about the matter has subsided, you know, that was in the news last week, and this week, Rahman Salmi moved on to somebody else's life discussions. So if that matter has subsided, any permission to revive the topic must cease. So those are enhancements or clarifications of this halacha as per the Rambam. Continuing on. Further, now this is new information. We did not do this last time. His condition, the Rambam's condition, also addresses the character. So that was one of Rabbi Feldman's questions. Let's say technically it's mutter to spread the information. But there are two parts to the speaking of the Lashon Hara. One is actual transgression, the words that I said, forbidden words that I was not allowed to say. But two, what about my character? What does it say about me as a person that I am going around spreading slanderous information about somebody else. Okay, maybe lemaisa, according to the, you know, exact letter of the law, might be mutter. But what does it say about me that I am engaged in such negative speech? So the Rambam here also addresses this character issue by allowing only incidental discussion and by prohibiting intentional dissemination, as we said in the previous paragraph. The Rambam is ensuring that no malicious motivation will be present. It is possible that his premise is there are two distinct elements inherent in the prohibition of Lashon Hara. Two distinct elements inherent in the prohibition. One is the character trait, and that is to which he refers in his opening comments on the laws of Lashon Hara. So we cannot take away the fact that I have to be careful to maintain the integrity of my character, even if something was said in public. Do I intentionally intend to disseminate the information? Is it old news and I brought it up again? When malice is present, quote, no amount of pre-existing publicity will mitigate the transgression. When malice is present, no amount of pre-existing publicity will mitigate the transgression. So no matter how many people it was said in front of, if I have wicked intention in further disseminating the information, no amount of pre-existing publicity will mitigate the transgression. A person has to be very honest with themselves. A person has to be self-aware to truly know if I feel some degree of animosity towards the person, even if it's public information, because of my character, on the inherent possible flaws to my character, no amount of pre-existing publicity will mitigate the transgression. However, the Rambam adds a second element to the prohibition, and that is the exposure of material that could be harmful or aggravating to the subject. So when the exposure of the material, is it going to be harmful or aggravating to the subject? This might be done without malice, yet it might be harmful nonetheless, and it's prohibitive. So we have two clauses of the Rambam's teachings here that make it absolutely forbidden to spread the information, even if it was said in the presence of three. One is, depending on your character, if malice is intended, and you know how you feel about somebody else, if we are intellectually and emotionally honest, which is not so easy with ourselves, but we have to try. If malice is present on your behalf, no amount of pre-existing publicity will negate the transgression of spreading it further. And second of all, if it will cause harm, even if you don't mean malice, by spreading it further to the subject, it may not be said. However, if the information is already public, or will inevitably become public, as it was said at a table with 9 other people, it is possible that neither harm nor negative character traits are being indulged. So this has nothing to do with your negative character, and it has nothing to do with furthering harm. It is only in that circumstance that Maimonides would permit speaking in the presence of three. So you feel no malice towards a person being spoken about, and it is so widely known that your speech will not cause further damage, only then does the Rambam say it's permitted to speak. And the truth is, we have to ask ourselves, if I speak Lashon Hara about somebody, do I really feel no malice towards them? And even if it was public, even if it was said by 9 people? And second of all, how can I guarantee that my added spread of that slander won't cause added harm? How do I know? Maybe, I think it won't, but in some fashion, ultimately it will. And it's also therefore to say. Now, Rabbi Feldman next quotes the Chafetz Chaim. The Chafetz Chaim suggests that the Rambam might be basing his interpretation on the Torah Lashon itself, because the Torah, when prohibiting us to speak Lashon Hara and Sefer Vayikra Parashas Kedoshim, says, Lo Seleich Rachil Ba'amecha. The imagery of a Rachil is a peddler. A peddler is equated with the speaker of Lashon Hara. The connotation of a peddler is someone who brings something from place to place, which is a metaphor for revelation. Something is present now where it used to not be. So a peddler, I don't know, he's peddling his wares, okay? In the olden days, in Europe, in the olden days on the Lower East Side, Breakstone's Cottages, the whole company began by 2 Jewish peddlers, brothers on the Lower East Side, who had a little push cart. True story. So you were pedal, okay? So you take your cheese and your yogurt and your curds and your whey from one corner to the other corner. It didn't used to be at the other corner. Pedaling your wares indicates taking something from one location to another location where it was not present before your arrival. So if the Torah calls a speaker of a Lashon Hara a rachil, excuse me, a peddler, it means that he's bringing his wares, in this case, negative speech, from one place to another place where it was not before. I'm sorry. The Chofetz Chaim teaches, perhaps this imagery is invoked, this idea of a rechil. The Torah could just say, don't speak negative talk. Lo lidaber lashon hara, lo lomar, lo lahagid, lo seilech rachil. We should not be a rachil, don't be a peddler, don't take the gossip from one place and move with your push cart, so to speak, to another place where the gossip was not present before, and now you're selling your curds and whey in the new street corner, and there were never curds and whey here before, your lashon hara wasn't here before. Peddler indicates taking the gossip from one place to another. Perhaps this imagery, says the Chafetz Chaim, is invoked to teach that Lashon Hara is primarily an act of exposure. The rachil, the peddler, exposes his curds and whey on the corner of the Lower East Side where it wasn't before. Lashon Hara is primarily an act of exposure. So perhaps the Chafetz Chaim understands, how do we understand this ba'ape talasa? Since the matter was exposed already, you're not bringing the cottage cheese to the corner, it was already there. So I'm just adding, excuse me, I'm sorry. So it would be smart if I go get a drink, right? I'm just adding to what was there. It was there already. I'm not bringing it for the first time, since the Torah says, lo seleich rachil, you cannot instigate, you cannot bring, since the item is already public. The Chafetz Chaim understands the relevance of Lashon Hara recedes. So again, there might be something very wrong with your character trait in repeating. You might cause machlokes between parties. You thought you weren't going to do any damage. You thought there was no malice involved. Taka, you did have malice and you felt animosity towards that person and you increased the damage, but perhaps the narrow definition of Lashon Hara is not present because the rachil before you, the public, already brought that information to that place and you are not peddling the wares for the first time in a new place. We're going to come in one more paragraph to something very practical, halacha lemaisa, even though this is very all practical, very halachic based classes these past few weeks, very important, and I think that it's giving us all, me for certain, and I hope you as well, a lot of food for thought and clarification into perhaps understandings of Lashon Hara and situations that we never even considered before. Continues Rabbi Feldman, within this view of Maimonides, the Rambam, the situation is one in which the content of the speech is actually Lashon Hara, but it's permitted because it doesn't increase damage anyways upon the victim. It doesn't increase damage because it was already brought to the place. It was already exposed. The previous peddler brought it. You are not increasing the damage to the victim because it was already exposed. If that is the case, it is understandable there would be certain limitations on the license to speak, as a Chafetz Chaim assumes. For example, there would still be the prohibition of accepting the report. You're not allowed to speak Lashon Hara. You're also not allowed to be Makabel. You know, people say, I'm not Makabel. There's literally a deoraisa not to accept the negative report. So just because that person might have a narrow license to speak because it was said in public, it doesn't mean malice. No further harm will come to the person. It was already exposed, so I'm not exposing anything that was a secret. Nevertheless, there is still a prohibition of accepting the report. So for the listener, it's problematic. You have to be very careful with all the accompanying restrictions. And all of this license to repeat information that was said in public, would only apply in an area where the information is likely to spread and not be on. So let's say the days before social networking, which was in our day and time, it's hard to remember, but there was a day and age before social networking, and there is, you know, a story being spread in a certain town, and it's public information in that town, but it's not going to reach another town. Maybe I should say the day before telephones. So going back to the olden days, okay, and the information was only in a certain town. This license would only apply in the area where the information is being spread this ba'ape telasa and not be on. So that's why it goes back to exposure. You can't be the peddler who brings the gossip, who brings the cottage cheese to a new street corner. If it's already being discussed, if it's already being sold by the Breakstones brothers or whatever their original name was on this corner, so it's already exposed. But I can't be the one to expose it further to an area where it was not exposed, even if it's public information in my area. There's a comment. 1 second, please. Oh, so after you just finished, I saw Chanu Wasserman's comment, and you also mentioned today's technology, which is really what I just said in my comment. So we were thinking along the same lines. Chanu Wasserman said, everyone could see what she posted. It's so interesting, 3 O's, how the idea of information being taken from place to place, understanding that a rachil is a peddler who introduces wares to a place where they never had that before, is so relevant today with today's technology. And it's not only interesting, it's frightening. It's not only interesting, it's frightening. Because in the olden days, it was harder to take your wares of Lashon Hara from place to place. And today, it's super easy and very scary, which goes back to how we started this year. So we need to put up higher and higher gedarim for ourselves, greater and greater fences. I mean, if it's matriach ourselves and we can't access the vegetables as easily, we have to think before we speak. We're more silent. We're given to contemplation. People mock us. So as a Chavetz Chaim, it's better to be embarrassed in this world than to be mortified in the next world. And now we come to an extremely interesting practical application that Rabbi Feldman brings down. Are there any teachers on this group? I don't know, but here we go. One of the issues raised in the application of Ba'apei Telasa in the presence of three, and remember, three stands for public. Three doesn't only mean three or more, is the question of whether it applies to gatherings such as a teacher's meeting. Very practical. Presumably, more than three individuals will be present at the teacher's meeting where sensitive conversation regarding confidential matters, specifically students generally, often takes place. So now what? It's ba'apei telasa, right? One of the teachers or the principal just revealed information about their student. It's in the presence of three or more. It's public. Does that mean I could leave the meeting and go tell everybody? Very practical. Halacha l'maisa. But I thought it's ba'apei telasa. And I thought the Gemara says, it's Erechin Tes Zayin Amar Aleph, that Rabba Bar Rav Huna says, Kol Milsa de Mis Amra Ba'apei Telasa, any speech that is said in the presence of three people or more that is assumed to be public knowledge, Leis Ba Mishum Lishna Bisha, there's no prohibition of Lashon Hara. Why? Ma'itama, what's the reason? Chavar Chavara Islay, your friend has a friend who he will tell. The Chavara de Chavara Chavara Islay, and your friend's friend has a friend who he will tell. And before you know it, it's going to be around the whole town of Radon, around the whole town of Surin Pupadisa, around the whole town of Woodmere and Lawrence, around the whole World Wide Web. So I just came out of a teacher's meeting, and there were 8 people, 10 people, 12 people. It's Ba'apei Telasa. Everyone is a friend and a friend and a friend. Can I spread the information that was just said at the meeting? Wow. In analyzing this issue, Rabbi Shlomo Rosner notes at least 3 relevant considerations. And again, Rabbi Feldman's work is so comprehensive. Every source that he quotes is footnoted with the original source inside. I'm not going through all the footnotes with you, but every page has a plethora, mamish, of footnotes. And he quotes every original source. Okay? Oh, I just lost my page. 1 second. Please. Okay. So in addressing this issue, Rabbi Shlomo Rosner notes at least 3 relevant considerations. 1, there's a Talmudic passage in Masechah Sanhedrin that prohibits a rabbinical court judge, okay, someone who sits on a rabbinic beis din, from revealing which judges voted for which litigant, presumably because of the harmful effects of such disclosure. So you're in the meeting, it would be very harmful to say which teacher said that the student should be suspended, and which teacher said the student should not be suspended, and who spoke negatively about the student, who didn't. So Rabbi Rosner says, there's a quote in his halachic discourse of this issue. There's a Talmudic passage in Maseches Sanhedrin 29a, Chav Tes Amar Alf, I did not look it up, I'm quoting Rabbi Feldman, prohibiting a rabbinical court judge from revealing which judges voted for which litigant, presumably because of the harmful effects of such disclosure. You can understand well that if word gets out that this one said about this one and this one said about this one, it will create tremendous mechlokes and animosity amongst Knesset Israel. Two, the understanding of that passage of the Chafetz Chaim, that the rule of Ape Talasa does not apply, okay, the permission to share information that's been said before three or more, says the Chafetz Chaim, does not apply in a setting in which the participants are God-fearing individuals who would not be expected to disseminate the information further. So you have a teacher's meeting of Rabbeim, and you hope, and you presume that those Rabbeim are all Yirei Shemaim, being mechanchim, the mechanchim of the future generation, and they love their students, and they see each student as a gem, and they have to discuss sometimes negative behavior that comes up. But since the Api Talasa, the information has been said in the presence of three or more, i.e. public, but it has been said in a group of Yirei Shamayim, we assume that such people will not spread the information further, and therefore the Chafetz Chaim says Ape Talasa does not apply. There is no, you cannot invoke this was Ape Talasa. There is no permission to spread the information further because they're Yirei Shamayim, and we assume that a Yirei Shamayim is not going to go repeat slander and be a rachil and take his information from place to place, even if it was said in public. Three, the general prohibition of revealing secrets, which would bind participants to honor the confidentiality of a closed meeting. So there are three reasons why in a meeting of a teacher's meeting, which at face value seems to be the leniency of Ba'apei Talasa. It's more than three people. It's going to become public knowledge. My friend is a friend. My friend's friend is a friend. Everyone is a friend today on Facebook. So why can't I say it? Three reasons. One, because of the Talmudic passage that prohibits a rabbinic court judge, so Rabbi Rosner applies the Talmudic passage from Sanhedrin to this teaching of Maseches Arachim, prohibits a rabbinic court judge from revealing which judge voted against which litigant for obvious reasons. Two, the Chafetz Chaim says that Ba'apei Talasa, in the presence of three, and the license to spread the slander further does not apply when you're talking about a public group. That is public people, but they are Yirei Shamayim because you do not expect such Yirei Shamayim to spread the information further. And three, there's a general prohibition of not revealing secrets, which binds the participants, in this case the teachers, to honor the confidentiality of a closed meeting. So that is an extremely practical application, halacha l'maisa, that could happen every day, at least once a week, anytime teachers convene. And today it doesn't have to be in person. It could be over Zoom. It could be in a conference call. That's also Ba'apei Talasa. Like Hannah Wasserman said, it's astounding to consider the ramifications of this teaching with technology, because today so much of what we say is public. Amaisa, every time you post something on a WhatsApp group that has you and two other people, it's Ba'apei Talasa. Well, do I have permission to go spread it further? Not so pasha. Okay, that was all according to the Rambam, with the clarifications of the Chafetz Chaim, practical application. Next, the second position regarding Ba'apei Talasa, continuing with Rabbi Feldman, okay, put forth by Rashi. Okay? So that was all based on the Rambam, because the Rambam adds a clause, and his clause was, if everybody remembers, if I could just find it because I want to quote it correctly, as long as he does not intend to spread the matter further. Remember, so we spoke about, do you feel any malice? If yes, you can't spread it further. Will it cause added harm to the victim or the subject? If so, you can spread it further. That was all based on the Rambam. The next understanding of Ba'apei Talasa and the presence of three and the seeming license to spread Lashon Hara further is based on Rashi. And I am quoting Rabbi Feldman. Rashi in his Talmudic commentary also applies the statement of Ba'apei Talasa to the listeners. So in other words, I'm one of the three. I'm one of the teachers. I'm one of the nine at the table. I am the listener, who heard a speaker say the information in public. Rashi holds, since the speaker revealed information in front of three or more listeners, it is an act that guarantees publicity. Tells us something about human nature. Rashi says that if the speaker said the information in the presence of three or more, It is an act that, quote, guarantees publicity. It can be safely assumed the speaker approves of the information being spread. So Rashi is trying to understand, Rashi is understanding the Gemara. Why would the Gemara give permission if I heard, I'm the listener, I heard the speech that was said in the presence of three or more, because my friend is a friend, and my friend's friend has a friend, and the whole world is a friend, and everyone's going to know. Well, it gives me rishus to spread the information further. It can be assumed that if the speaker said the information in public, he approves of the information being spread. So you have the right to assume that because he said it in public, he approves of the information being spread, which is why, according to Rashi, the Gemara then says, you have permission to say the information. But Rabbi Feldman says, it's fascinating. This is all fascinating. If this is the basis for permission, it is clearly a very narrow license. The approval, why? Just because the speaker approves of it being spread further, does that give me the right, as the listener, to spread it further? He might approve. That's very nice. Maybe he approves of speaking Lashon Hara. We just said in the presence of three. So how could Rashi say, you're allowed to go spread it further? Am I allowed to spread it further? Am I allowed to speak Lashon Hara? Am I allowed to be the Rechil? Am I allowed to take the cottage cheese in the cottage cheese case? Yes, to the next corner when I wasn't there before. Could I take my wares to the next corner just because the speaker approves of it being said? So how does that give the listener the license to spread the wares? So Rabbi Feldman says, if this is the basis for permission, as Rashi understands, it's a very narrow license. The approval of the speaker, which is implied and implicit because he said it in public, does not help for conventional Lashon Hara. The speaker's in the wrong for saying it in the first place. And his agreement that it might be spread further is useless in mitigating the violation. God said you can't say it. Oh, so the speaker comes along and tells nine women at the wedding table some juicy piece of Lashon Hara about the Machatenister. So she was wrong for saying it in the first place, and you're wrong for spreading it. So who cares if the speaker doesn't care if it's said over? She clearly doesn't care if it's said over. She just said it in public. Does that give me a license to go spread it further? Rabbi Feldman points out that she was wrong for saying it, and you're going to be wrong for spreading it. Who cares if it was Ba'ape Talas in the presence of three? Everybody's wrong. Quite the contrary. Fascinating. Quite the contrary, says Rabbi Feldman. The illicit gossip is usually interested in having his efforts spread. He's so happy. He was a gossiper, or she was a gossiper, and he or she wants you to spread it further. So why do you have permission to spread it further just because they said in the presence of three? Does this justify the listening by those present, and they're further spreading the information? How can we understand Rashi's position that since it was revealed in the presence of three or more, an act that guarantees publicity, it can be assumed that the speaker approves of his information being spread? Of course he approves of his information being spread. He's a Mesaper Lashon Hara. He wants it to be spread. You know what I know about the Mechatenister, and there's 10 women at the table, and now everyone's going to know about the Mechatenister. Why does it help that it was said in public? They were wrong for saying it. And aren't I wrong for spreading it? So how do I understand Rashi? Whew. Wow. I also remember when Shady Hammer said, you just can't talk. Shady, are you still here? Remember? So sometimes when we learn the technicalities of these halachos, we realize how much we have to daven for siyata d'shmaya, to apply what we're learning and make it the reality of our lives. Ba'ezras Hashem, Amir Vesum Shana, at least we'll be able to say, Bonjour, we tried. If you're not even trying, how are you going to get there? You have to try. Well, sometimes I'm going to stumble. Sometimes the goats are going to get into the garden. Sometimes I'm going to bring the curds and whey to the next corner. I have to at least try. If I don't try, how can I even know what to do? If I don't even learn the halachos, how am I possibly supposed to know? If I'm a teacher in the meeting, what am I supposed to do? If I'm a woman at the table, what am I supposed to do? I'm a man at Kiddush Club after davening pre-corona. What am I supposed to do? Someone just said something. He goes, Ape Telasa. It means I could just go call Maseches Arachin, you know, before you say Dvar Torah at the table. I have something to say that I heard at Kiddush Club. The Gemara says you're going to sound so religious. And Maseches Arachin, Tazayin, Amar Aleph. Not anything said in the presence of three. There's no prohibition of Lashon Hara. So now it's a license. It's very complicated. It's not a license. There's many facets and aspects of this understanding, but at least we have to try. If I don't try to improve my speech, if I don't learn the parameters, I can't possibly be successful. So going back to the question, Rabbi Feldman, how do we understand this Rashi? The illicit gossip, the person who spoke negative, is interested in having his report spread. He's very happy for you to spread it further. Does that justify the listener? They can accept the report and then go spread it further? The only possible understanding of Rashi's interpretation, says Rabbi Feldman, is that the reference is extremely limited, involving one of the few situations, in which the speaker's acquiescence does make a difference. How so? For example, so again, practical application. For example, the information might be a personal revelation by the speaker, which would normally demand confidentiality on the part of the listener. So the speaker is revealing something personal about himself in public. Normally, such a revelation, if he tells it to one person, would demand confidentiality on the part of the listener. However, if the revelation took place in public, it can be assumed the speaker does not object to its exposure. So if someone tells you something about themselves in public that you're not sure was meant to be private or not, but the fact that they said it in public at the Kiddush Club, at the teacher's meeting, not about the student, at the wedding, they tell you something about themselves. Okay? I don't know, they have a disability. Their child is getting divorced. All these things are chas v'shalom l'aleinu. Their business went under. I don't know. They're revealing something not about somebody else. Anything said in the presence of three being public, standing in for the public, does not involve the prohibition of lashon hara. Because the way we understand Rashi is, he has said something, a personal revelation about himself, which would normally demand confidentiality on the part of the listeners. However, if the person says it in public, he doesn't lower his voice, he's not whispering, he's shouting it out in front of everybody in public, it can be assumed, in this case, that the speaker does not object to its exposure. Alternatively, the statement might be a type of rechilas, the speaker is commenting about a third party. The concern would be transmitting the information to that third party would provoke a conflict. However, if it was said in public, so these are two ways of understanding Rashi, two applications. One is the speaker made a personal revelation about himself, not one-to-one. Not please don't repeat this, please don't forward, please don't tell anyone. And if the daven that other person really should not tell, really should not forward. About himself in public, right? Not about the mechatenista. So then we are allowed to assume that they don't mind the information being spread further. They wouldn't have said in public in the first place. Or, second application, the statement is a type of rechilus, with the speaker commenting about a third party. The concern would be transmitting the information to the third party would provoke a conflict, machlokas. However, since it was said in public, it is expected that the subject will hear about it, and therefore it cannot be inflammatory in nature. So, I don't know, the one woman at the table said something to nine other women, okay? And normally it will be rechilas for those nine women, one of those nine women, to go to person C at the next table and say, do you know what woman number one just said about you? It will lead to machlokas. However, since it was said in public, we assume that the speaker does not mind if person C hears what was said about her. It can't possibly be for the purpose of mechlokas, ill will or negativity, and therefore it can be shared further. So those, according to Rabbi Feldman's interpretation, and again, so many footnotes, are how we understand Ape Telasa according to Rashi. It can't just be someone says something in public, you could go spread it further. They want it to be spread further. And what about you as a person? No. Either they said something personal about themselves, that they clearly don't mind that people know, or they wouldn't have said it in public. So you can assume, if it was said it before everybody, so they don't mind, and therefore you can tell it further. And the second justification or understanding of Rashi is that it's a form of rechilus, potentially, but in this case it's not. Since they said it in public, it can be assumed that they don't mind if the subject hears what they said, and therefore it is okay to go tell the subject. Okay, I don't really want to start. We're now going to the third position of understanding Ba'apei Talasa, since we have a minute and a half left. to class, it's not really one second. Okay, well, we do the first sentence of the third interpretation. The third position. So we have learned according to the Rambam. We have learned according to Rashi. Moving up. The third position regarding Ape Telasa in the presence of three is the most surprising. There are views among the early authorities that the license of Ba'ape Telasa in the presence of three is applicable not to the listener. So the Rambam understands it with the clarifications of the Chavetz Chaim and other sources. Rabbi Rosner understands it to be applied to the listeners. Ba'ape Telasa, according to the Rambam, applies to the listener. The speaker said something. I, as a listener, part of the public party, have permission to spread it further with many, many restrictions. According to Rashi, it also applies to the listener, as we have just learned. The third view says that Ba'ape Telasa applies not to the listener, but to the speaker, justifying his speech when a larger audience is present. So for some reason, saying the Lashon Hara in a group, as opposed to one-to-one or one-to-two, would actually justify his speech when a larger audience is present. One authority to maintain this interpretation that it applies not to the listeners, but to the speaker. So the woman at the table, the man at the Kiddush Club, the teacher who spoke Lashon Hara, even though the teacher's meeting we have already concluded, it can't be spread further. One authority to maintain such an interpretation is Rabbeinu Yonah of Gerona. We are going to stop. Because I didn't want to waste a minute and a half. So we're going to, to be continued next time. And now we're going to understand the next position, which is how does Ba'ape Telasa apply not to the listeners, but rather to the speaker himself? And what is the license to speak the Lashon Hara just because it is in public? We will, Ba'azor Hashem, I have one more paragraph of Rabbi Feldman, so we will, Ba'azor Hashem, finish it next time. We shall all be well. This class should be an Ali and Hashem for Tzvi Gershon, Ben Yoel V'chana, Allah V'Sham. Should be a Meili Tzasho, your whole family for Besuras Tovos. We shall also all be Zocha to Siyata D'Shmaya. May the Ba'an Shalom help us not only learn, not only say, God, I'm trying, but apply what we are learning to our everyday lives. I wish you 2 weeks of Si'ata D'Shmaya in the Inyanei Shmiras HaLashon, and Be'ezras Hashem, we will continue next time. Thank you so much, everybody.